This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
A few days ago, we had an incident where migrants jumped into the sea and swam into France and then were forced back into Italy. So this whole situation has reached a bit of a crisis.
That's Josephine McKenna reporting about the desperate attempts of migrants to reach France. Details coming up. Also, Egypt is about to get a $12 billion loan from the International Monetary Fund. And continued insecurity in northern Mali is disrupting delivery of humanitarian aid delivery. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on African News Tonight. The International Monetary Fund has announced an agreement to loan Egypt $12 billion to help fix an ailing economy in the Arab world's most populous country. The IMF said today the loan supports a government reform program to alleviate the demand for black market dollar trading, to bring down the budget deficit and government debt, to encourage economic growth and create jobs. In a statement today, the IMF called Egypt, with a population of 99 million, a strong country that has some problems that need to be fixed urgently. Egypt earlier this week already announced it would raise electricity prices by at least a quarter, a jump forward in its plan to eliminate the subsidies altogether by 2019. Egypt has suffered high inflation, foreign currency shortages, and lack of tourism and investment since the 2011 uprising that overthrew longtime autocrat Hosni Mubarak. Cairo officially says they will focus efforts on alleviating any effects on the poor, those who will feel the economic pain in the short term, an experience that could spark trouble on the streets of Egypt. The Alliance for a Green Revolution in Africa, AGRA, welcomes the recent passage of the U.S. Global Food Security Act of 2016. The Alliance says the Act is one of the most progressive economic development initiatives for African agriculture to come out of Washington in decades. They hope the passage of the Act shows a lasting U.S. consensus on how to support agriculture in Africa. Rabi Harawa is the interim head of the Farmers Solutions Program at AGRA. She spoke with my colleague Kim Lewis about what the passage of the Act means for African farmers and food security.
I think the U.S. Global Food Security Act is really good news to countries in Africa, because this act actually solidifies the progress that have been made through programs like the Feed the Future, which implemented across different African countries. And I'm pleased to say that our organization, AGRA, is actually pleased to be one of the many actors in Africa working with the U.S. to deliver on a shared mission to end hunger and reduce poverty by investing in our continent's family farmers. This act actually is going to put us forward with this type of investment. Here at AGRA, we are implementing a project under the Future supported by USAID on scaling seeds and technologies partnership. For the past 4 years, this has helped to accelerate farmers' access to improved seeds and better farming technologies in countries like Ethiopia, Ghana, Malawi, Mozambique, Senegal, and Tanzania. So this is indeed a welcome idea, and it really sends a clear message that the U.S. is committed to empowering smallholder farmers and strengthen communities and economies through agricultural development.
Also, how will this act improve or ensure that farmers do have the access to seeds, fertilizers, and the technical tools that they need to farm?
There are already initiatives policies that are taking place right now through the support from the U.S. But also, I have to mention that I think this is coming at the right time when African governments have actually recommitted their support, renewed their support through the Malabo Declaration to at least allocate 10% of their national budgets to agriculture. Through this act and what is already taking place on the African continent, I think what we need to have now is to put the two efforts together whereby this budget really now specifically focuses on bringing seeds of different crop varieties to farmers. And when you talk about seeds, we are talking of improved seeds that are drought tolerant. If you look at the climate now, I think the changes have really affected a lot of productivity. But also bringing inputs like fertilizers to the farmers. So we are talking about creating enabling environment for credit to be accessible to smallholder farmers. This is credit that is affordable to enable farmers apply inputs like fertilizer. It also brings the opportunity to actually increase access to finance knowledge for smallholder farmers. You know, farmers, they need simple knowledge, for example, when to apply fertilizer, at what soil and water management technologies. Through these efforts, we will see that we can be able to bring this knowledge to our smallholder farmers. But more importantly, even helping farmers to access functioning output markets so that when they produce their crops, they are able to get prices that they can actually benefit. I think we need to get to a place where farmers, they are going beyond subsistence agriculture, but they are now getting into agribusiness, where the agriculture becomes an enterprise which can be able to generate them not just food, but also bring income.
Your African-led alliance really puts farmers at the forefront in ensuring that poverty is reduced and that there is equality, that farmers have the same choices that other farmers have elsewhere in the world. So how will this act work to make sure that African farmers have equal access to what other farmers have?
If you read through the U.S. Global Equality, I think there is already emphasis on the inclusive agricultural growth. This means that improving access to knowledge, both for the men and women, but also youth, and also make sure that even the poorest of the poor are getting rich. So that in itself, that deliberate act of really deliberately reaching to men and women, and also making sure that, you know, we are creating the enabling environment, for example, women to access diversified crop varieties, for example, women accessing, you know, legume crops that are very important for nutrition, also youth getting access to finance to help them to start agribusiness. So this in itself brings the platform where you see that there is equality across the board. Women and men are equally having access to technologies that can improve their livelihoods through agriculture.
That was Rabi Harawa, interim head of the Farmers Solutions Program at AGRA. She spoke with my colleague Kim Lewis from Nairobi. UN Special Envoy to Western Sahara, Christopher Ross, is preparing to revive negotiations to resolve a 40-year dispute over the Western Sahara. The territorial dispute centers on two neighboring powers, Morocco and Algeria. Middle East reporter Mohamed El-Shenawi talked with Mohamed Cherkawi, professor of conflict resolution analysis at George Mason University in Washington, D.C., about the possibility of a compromise to resolve the future of the territory and the possibility of self-rule for the territory.
The most recent U.N. resolution, 2285, has called both parties, Morocco and the Polisario Front, to prepare for a fifth round of negotiations 4 years after the last one in New York. In the last couple of days only, a formal proposal has been handed to both parties and other stakeholders in the region. I'm referring to Algeria in particular, about what should be done. And now the UN is trying to convince all stakeholders to resume their negotiation process. I believe Christopher Ross now is more empowered than any previous time to resume these negotiations or this mediation, if you like. He should be touring the region within a few days this month. The presence of the UN peacekeeping force in Laayoune is also problematic. Morocco has agreed to an incremental return of the 84 UN team, but so far we have only seen 25 of them who have returned to their posts. So I cannot predict any real possibility that the referendum would be discussed and also the UN can fulfill its mandate through a skeleton team of observers.
Morocco returned to the African Union after three decades of protest over admitting the Polisario Front as a member. Would that help or complicate the efforts to resolve the Western Sahara dispute?
I believe we should not read too much into this diplomatic maneuvering on the part of the Moroccan leadership, because we've been here in the past on both sides, basically, which, you know, it embodies how both sides can play this diplomatic game in the African or the continental context. So there was a debate at the African Union for many, many years, and I think Morocco now has made its case. I mean, the king in his last speech at the African Union summit argued that the Sahrawi Republic or Sadr is neither a UN state nor a member of the Arab League. Therefore, it doesn't have full sovereignty, and there are already 34 members of the African Union who do not recognize such a political entity. So this could be seen as either a regional victory of the Moroccan diplomacy in the continent or maybe some maneuvering, especially if we consider the stalemate of the last 25 years since MINURSO was deployed in the Western Sahara in September 1991. However, this should not translate into something very drastic as far as the UN approach is concerned. So I still believe that real prospects of a promising political deal depend on the Moroccan-Algerian future rapprochement. So I would like to see a scenario where some great powers, probably the United States, France, Britain, maybe others, you know, influential world leaders, can provide these two nations some incentives to help them or to encourage them to accept certain modification or certain evolution of their political positions. Otherwise, we may see another diplomatic move on the part of the Polisario, as has been the case for the last 4 years. So we have this ping-pong game between the two sides in either making new friends or outperforming each other within the continent of Africa. But unfortunately, this political maneuvering has not really showed us another exit or another sincere willingness to consider an alternative.
Experts argue that the new leadership of Polisario after the death of its leader, Mohamed Abdelaziz, is more determined to push for independence. Do you agree with that assessment?
No. This particular conflict in North Africa has not been perpetuated by any charismatic leaders or personal motivations. So I consider it as a geostrategic interest-based conflict between two middle powers, Morocco and Algeria, and who have this unfriendly relationships since the war of 1963. So the next turning point will not depend on the successor of Mohamed Abdelaziz or any other leader of that particular front, but on the will of several influential military leaders in Rabat as well as in Algiers who have been afraid of real engagement in negotiation.
That was Mohammed Cherkawi, professor of conflict resolution analysis at George Mason University in Washington, D.C. He was talking to reporter Mohammed El-Shenawi. You're listening to African News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Hayes Wuhib in Washington. Twenty past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Egypt is about to get a $12 billion loan from the International Monetary Fund. And the UN is trying to revive negotiations to resolve a 40-year dispute over the Western Sahara. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Migrants continue to flow into the small Italian town of Ventimiglia at the French border. Many are waiting in a commercial rail yard to cross into France. A few have jumped into the Mediterranean to swim to France. Reporter Josephine McKenna in Rome talks to VOA's David Arnold in Washington about today's events in Ventimiglia and what's happening throughout Italy as the migration crisis continues.
Ventimiglia is on the border of Italy and France, and migrants have been gathering there over the last few months. About several hundred, actually, have been gathering in the town. And a few days ago, we had an incident where migrants jumped into the sea and swam into France and then were forced back into Italy. So this whole situation has reached a bit of a crisis, and the Italian government has moved in there to use buses to start moving the migrants to other parts of Italy to try and defuse the situation. They're being bussed to identification centres in other parts of Italy. The national police chief, Franco Gabrielli, said this is the only way to defuse the situation, to try and move these migrants somewhere else. Incidentally, the Red Cross said it had served 800 breakfasts to migrants in this particular town and has been serving meals over the last few days. So that gives you some idea of just the scale of the problem there. And the Catholic Church and other charities have also been working to help the migrants. But it's been quite an intense situation in the town of Ventimiglia.
I recall many months ago, migrants swam into the ocean to get into France and they were brought back. This has been going on in Ventimiglia for some time. How big a town is this for a couple of hundred refugees?
It's a fairly small town. It's really been mobilized around this issue. One of the support organizations for the migrants called No Borders has also been holding protests and been trying to support the migrants who come from Eritrea, Chad, Nigeria, Sudan, and Afghanistan. So it's a small town, and that's why it's really become such a potential conflict for this town, because it can't really handle, or it doesn't believe it can handle, this influx, which continues to grow, which continues to be stopped, because, as we know, the borders of France and Switzerland have been closed and the border checks are becoming much more stringent. These migrants are being, in a sense, trapped inside Italy without the possibility to move to other European countries where they may have gone in the past.
Can you tell me a little bit about the scene in this commercial rail yard and in St. Anthony's Parish?
Around the commercial, this disused rail yard, this is where the Red Cross has been helping people who've come through this town. And the Red Cross says that they've helped thousands of people who've moved through their facility in recent weeks. Incidentally, only 10, they say, have filed requests for political asylum in Italy. That's one issue that concerns the Italians, because, once again, it's a reminder of how many people come through Italy. They make that perilous crossing across the Mediterranean. They move up through Sicily and the mainland of Italy. And they've got their sights on Germany, France, Sweden, where they often want to go and meet up with migrants or family members there. The Catholic Church has also been very active in Ventimiglia. In one of the neighbourhoods, they're hosting 2 dozen families in a church, and have also been concerned about the situation in Ventimiglia as the numbers have been congregating there.
For those migrants who can't successfully break into France, they are being bused back to some other places. Are they being bused to other places in Italy, or can Italy send them somewhere else?
At the moment, they're being moved to other parts of Italy. Many of the councils across Italy are starting to complain that they can't handle the number of migrants. Milan, for example, is preparing to host extra migrants in an old army barracks. The city has around 3,000 migrants now, and the Catholic charity Caritas has agreed to host another 35 in the city. It's already hosting around 1,800 migrants there. In another move today, Rome authorities moved into a tent city known as Baobab, and they've taken away around 80 immigrants in Rome for identification. And that's of concern to some of the social welfare agencies and Save the Children, because many of these migrants have been psychologically damaged from the journey through Libya and across the Mediterranean. And some of them are very upset about having to deal with the authorities and face what they see as some sort of forcible removal from this tent city in Rome.
It sounds like Italy has found no solution to the problem.
Italy seems to be looking at all sorts of measures to try and spread the load of immigrants around between different regions and different councils. It's not all that happy with the what it considers to be a lack of support from other European countries. And there's also a great deal of concern about blocking the borders. Austria, Switzerland, France are taking a stronger line now and closing the borders and making it much more difficult for migrants to move to other countries. There's also debate about repatriation. Italy wants to see more migrants repatriated to their home countries. That seems to be a very slow process, and it doesn't seem to be happening very quickly at the moment.
That was Josephine McKenna in Rome talking to David Arnold in Washington. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Werkinger, and our engineer, Skip Sisk, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Democracy in action. That's what the U.S. presidential election is all about. Who's going to be the new president of the United States come November 8th? Tune in to VOA's coverage of the 2016 presidential election. Reports, expert analysis, and more. Professional, up-to-the-minute coverage that can't be found anywhere else. Right here on VOA.
Celebrate the sounds of Africa today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That's our mission in your show, Music Time in Africa. Hello, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. Join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC and discover the best Pan-African music in the world. We play it all right here, only the best on VOA Africa.
This is a public service announcement from VOA Africa.
If you come into contact with the bodily fluids of a person infected with Ebola, you must wash with soap and water immediately. I'm Dr. Conde Greaves. The Ebola virus is only present in the blood, feces, vomit, breast milk, sweat, and semen of people who are seriously ill. The virus must get into your body to infect you. Do not touch your eyes, nose, or mouth, and cover any cuts on the skin. If you are caring for someone who has Ebola, do not handle bedding, towels, or clothes that may be soiled with bodily fluids without gloves. Avoid sexual activity with male survivors of Ebola. Men carry the virus in semen for up to 90 days. Ebola cannot survive for long outside the body. Sunlight, heat, Clorox, and alcohol will kill the virus. Know the facts about Ebola. Knowledge is life.
This was a public service announcement from VOA Africa.